Hi, Neil Warren here again, and welcome to another episode of the Happy Hour Harmonica Podcast, with more interviews with some of the finest harmonica players around today. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and also check out the Spotify playlist, where some of the tracks discussed during the interviews can be heard. A quick word from my sponsor now, the Lone Wolf Blues Company, makers of effects pedals, microphones and more, designed for harmonica. Remember, when you want control over your tone, you want Lone Wolf. Chromatic player Grégoire Moret joins me today. After studying jazz at the New School in New York, Grégoire went on to play with some of the biggest names in jazz, from Jimmy Scott to Cassandra Wilson, Pat Metheny and Herbie Hancock. In 2012, Grégoire made the first of the albums under his own name, as well as continuing to be an in-demand sideman. Grégoire Moret, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Firstly, we'll talk a bit about your background. You're originally from Switzerland, and you grew up just outside Geneva.
Exactly, in a little town called Chancy, which is the last village before the border to France.
So you're French-speaking?
French-speaking.
So I had a friend in from Switzerland, and like you guys like speak five languages or something, don't you? Incredible in Switzerland.
Really, three, and then there's one dialect that very few people do speak. So we speak French, Italian, and German, and of course we do speak English. There's another dialect called Romanche, which very few people do speak in the part of Switzerland called the Grison.
A lot of people make that comparison between languages and music. What do you think about that? Is there anything in that?
I actually compare more music to mathematics. I feel there's some, and I think there's a lot of connection to that. I do believe that music is sort of the international language, in a sense. It's one of those things that we all relate to and have some kind of emotional connection to, and it's easy to just get into a world and kind of having a great moment with either a group of people or just another musician. And it can be being part of the audience or the fellow musicians sharing the stage with somebody else. So that's real special.
And so you got a Swiss father and an American mother.
Yeah, my mother was born and raised in New York, and my father in Switzerland, Geneva.
And your father was a jazz musician. I think that's what got you first interested in music from a young age.
Yeah, I mean, still is really. I mean, he retired because he's a doctor. He was a doctor, but he's still playing music. My brother's a musician as well, and he's also a pilot. He's flying planes. So we all are musicians in the family.
What instrument did your father play?
He played banjo. He still does. And my brother plays vibraphone and percussions.
Your father was a jazz banjo player, was he?
Yeah, but more traditional jazz, you know, more like sort of the early New Orleans sort of style of music. And my brother played more modern as well as kind of traditional. I'm more towards like the modern part of jazz.
And so what was the music scene like around Geneva? Was that something you could draw on?
I mean, as a young musician and a student, and it was good, you know. Thanks to my father, I met a lot of musicians early on. And then as I went to high school, I met more people. And then I became really serious about music. So that's when I met a lot more musicians. Some of them were very, very good teachers and really give me great advice. After that, I had to go, you know, I had to find something and somewhere else to try to grow. And that's what actually some of my best teachers told me. They were like, listen, you're young, you should just try to see what's going on out there, especially in New York. And then you can always come back, you'll see, you'll decide. And that's what I did. I went to study. I came here in New York to study, and I never left, basically. Started having opportunities here, playing with like West African musicians, then Latino musicians like Tito Puente, Patato Valdez. And then eventually I just decided to stay because it was just a whole lot going on, and I started working here.
So you started playing the harmonica relatively late, at the age of 17, yeah? So were you playing other instruments until that age?
I actually started as a kid to sing very early. I only stopped singing when my voice changed. thanks to that, I started really having good ears. I could really kind of hear just about anything. And when I picked up the harmonica a bit later, it was not easy, but I moved kind of quickly through the different stage of playing the instrument because I could hear very, very well. And that's something that I developed by singing a lot as a kid. And also as a kid, I was playing a little bit of drums and a little bit of guitar. But I stopped after 2 years. The teachers I had, I just never felt were connected to the same kind of music I was trying to play. And just practicing scale, just to practicing scale was a downer for me, at least, you know, early on. I wanted to play tunes. And they were all telling me, no, you need to practice scales first. And I was like, man, okay, I'll practice some scales, but I would love to play something, a melody, you know. It wasn't really what they were teaching, so I stopped. And then eventually when I picked up the harmonica, I was self-taught, so I started just playing melodies, blues and stuff like that. And it was just exactly what I wanted to play. And then eventually I realized that, yeah, I need to learn scales too. And then I had an understanding of why I needed to play and practice scales, you know, after having learned a couple of tunes.
And so did you start playing the chromatic first, or did you start playing the diatonic first?
I started to play the diatonic when I was about 15. I loved it. I never thought I was going to play chromatic. I felt actually no connection early on to chromatic harmonica. My parents gave me one for my birthday, and it felt so different. It sounded so different. I was like, I just left it somewhere and never touched it until when I wanted to change my major in school, in high school. And I wanted to change from languages to music. And the only way they would accept me was if I was picking up a quote-unquote chromatic instrument. So I asked them if it was okay for me to play chromatic harmonica, and they accepted. At the end of the year of training, I had to be able to pass an exam, and I played like a classical piece, a Chopin piece, on the chromatic harmonica. And then after that, I started playing in an ensemble at school with other young musicians, and they all wanted to play jazz. I was like, well, yeah, let's try to play some tunes on jazz, and I'll start playing the chromatic a bit. And then I just became completely passionate about trying to play this instrument, and I never went back really to the diatonic harmonica.
Yeah, it's really interesting to say that. So you were, in a way, you were kind of forced to the chromatic.
Yeah.
You know, most harmonica players play the diatonic. Yeah, it's more accessible. It's easier to play. You know, you're kind of in one key. And what would you say to people who play the diatonic about maybe, you know, who might be interested in playing the chromatic, some of the advantages of the chromatic?
A first thing that's good if you already have some skills on the diatonic harmonica is pick up like a regular chromatic and still play the blues on it, like a D minor blues, which is like the standard thing that done a lot with harmonica players. After that, once you feel like good playing that, pick up another key playing the blues. You know, stay with like simple structures like the blues if the person, whoever is the harmonica player, is comfortable with that form. And start playing in different keys, so with the same chromatic harmonica, of course. So it's like you started playing in D minor, you now can also play kind of in G, in C, and then you try to go to F, and maybe eventually B flat, and you know what I mean? And you go to different keys, and then start to see what you can do on the harmonica. It's going to become more and more challenging as you go to all the 12 keys, but it's a really good way to get really familiar with the instrument. To do that, it's best to take a really simple form or a simple tune that you're very, very comfortable playing and try to expand playing that in all 12 keys rather than just learn different tunes that are complex, hard to play, and try to accomplish that in keys that are already also challenging.
And, I mean, what about the different, you know, sort of music you can play between the diatonic and chromatic? Obviously, a lot of people are interested in playing blues initially, and that's what gets people interested into the harmonica. And then they might expand to start getting interested in other sorts of music. And I think that's where the chromatic can come in, can't it?
Well, you got Brendan Power, you know, who's like the big Irish music connoisseur who plays that very well on the chromatic. But you can just play just about anything. So I would start with the blues. Then you can go into other songs that are relatively simple, certain folk songs, certain country songs, and then pop songs. You know, just kind of learn the melody eventually try to learn the chord changes and start trying to have an ability to hear what are the notes that are changing through the harmonies so you can kind of play those on the instrument. And the good thing is to really always keep that same harmonica, chromatic harmonica, maybe like the usual one is to play a C chromatic harmonica. And off of that, just try to get into different keys. So if you go to F, there's just one flat. If you go to G, there's one sharp. So it's not too hard. Then you go to two sharps with D and two flats with B flat. You can also play the relative minor. So like G minor, for instance, like Autumn Leaves is played most of the time in G minor. And it's a great song to learn because it's a very simple song, simple form. You start with the melody, of course, which is simple, and then eventually go with the changes and try to understand how they go and eventually see and hear your way through the song and try to improvise. So there's a lot of ways to improvise. Like somebody like Richie Bayrak was talking about a lot was motivic development, which is just to take a motif, like two notes, three notes, and develop that through the song instead of just playing random ideas that are not connected. You want to try to tell a story when you play a song. Also, you can also always connect to the melody because it's really all about that song. So you can kind of do variations on the melody. That's also a good way to start improvising.
So you moved across to New York when you were, I think, 19.
Yeah, even earlier than that, I think 18, yeah.
Yeah, so and you went to study at the New School in New York, which is that a dedicated jazz school?
Yeah, it's a good jazz school. It was really great at the time I was there. It was a lot of great students and a lot of great teachers.
So New York is, you know, as I understand it, it's kind of the epicenter of the jazz scene these days. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on all around the world, you know. It used to be where New York was the only place. But already, if you look all around the U.S., each town has a sound and a type of music that they really became famous for. But then if you look all around the world, there's also some of that in the rest of the world as well. So New York is sort of like the place, but it's not the only place now. There's just a lot of players all around. And that's the thing that's really exciting is that when I get to travel, I get to meet other musicians from different places in the world.
So you were in obviously in the school in New York, but you were playing out in New York with your little chromatic harmonica, playing jazz against all these very loud saxophones. And so, how was that when you were trying to find your way in New York? And how was it received as a chromatic harmonica player?
It was quite challenging, you know, but it was challenging all the way from being in school. I was the only chromatic player. Some teachers were really excited about having a musician playing the chromatic harmonica. Some other just didn't care much. And I had to kind of show all of them that I could really play. And eventually, the same thing happened being on the scene in New York, like starting to play in different places, sitting in different bands with different bands or jamming with different people. And I had to really convince people through my playing, well, you know, that I could really be respected as a musician. Because eventually, if you really look at it, is that if I play, for instance, with somebody like Pat Metheny, Pat has the choice to hire anybody, not just, of course, harmonica players. So if it is going to be a saxophone player, he's going to hire the best, you know. So I'm basically in competition with every musician. So it's the same thing with Herbie. Like, Herbie doesn't hire me just because he needs a harmonica player. He hires me because he can really relate to what I'm doing and he feels that I really play the music to the best of what it can be played. I'm sure there's people and musicians that have experienced different things. A person who is really specifically wanting to hire a harmonica player and that's been most of their career like that, where they just happen to be there and play great and be hired because somebody wanted a harmonica player. This is not the case for me. For me, the situation was totally different. It was people wanted something different, maybe. suddenly they just discovered what I was doing and were like, well, this is quite unusual. But at the same time, with this unusual instrument, and he's just approaching the music the way I want it to be approached. You know, I'm excited playing with him because we always trying to go beyond ourselves playing this music. So that's my experience, really. But even with vocalists, even when I was playing with Cassandra Wilson or Diane Reeves or, you know, Jimmy Scott, it wasn't just about playing the harmonica. It was about the music and the fact that I knew how to approach their music and I could really relate to them as vocalists. I could help them and do everything I could to make the music better. I do believe that, yeah, if I had played another instrument, I don't think it would have necessarily changed a lot. It was really about just my voice, in a sense, that happened to exist with the harmonica. That's something I talked to Toots Thielemans a bit, you know, and he actually completely agreed. Like, that was his opinion as well. That's the way he looked at himself. He was like, I'm a musician first, and I happen to play the harmonica.
So let's talk through some of your, your great recordings you've done with many different people. So I think one of the first people you had success with was Jimmy Scott on the Holding Back the Years album, in 98. So is he? You started gigging with him around New York.
It's a beautiful story with him. I mean, I met him during a recording session after my first year at the New School. A student at the New School that was a wealthy businessman, also studied at the New School, wanted to record his first CD. And he, through the help of the producer at the time, he hired some of the best musicians. And as a special guest, Jimmy Scott. The producer was a teacher at the New School, and he knew me, and he really liked what I was doing, how I was playing. And he decided that maybe they could hire me for a song or two. I came and recorded that with Jimmy Scott as well. And Jimmy Scott was really excited, and he thought that we should stay in touch and eventually maybe play together again. And we completely lost touch. But eventually, I was able to find him again. I went to a concert of his, and this time he gave me his number, and we kept in touch. And eventually invited me to go check out one of his concerts at the Iridium in New York. And Jimmy was there at the bar, and he looked at me and said, "Hey, man, where were you yesterday? We were waiting for you." And he was like, "Okay, I mean, we're about to play in about 5 minutes. Jump on stage, man." Basically, what happened, he really wanted to see how I was handling pressure. So he put me on the spot, and I did well enough that he was like, "Okay, you got it. Come back tomorrow." And I came back the next day, and I had the gig.
And then you played with him then for 5 years, on and off, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. I played with him for a few years, recorded a few records, learned a lot, learned how to play a ballad.
And then, yeah, so running through 99, you played on the Jack Terrison album, What Is It?, which is a big success.
I knew Jackie. I met him actually at the Montreal Jazz Festival maybe a year or two before. We didn't really stay in touch much, but eventually he was also trying to expand his trio and do something different. He asked me to come and join the band he was putting together, and we toured for about a year together after the recording that record. And we had a great time. I mean, also, same thing, I learned a lot, and it was great.
And then in 2002, after, I'll probably get the name wrong, but did you win the Grammy for the album The Cookie Anthropological Mixtape with
Michelle and the Guercello? I don't even know. Like, she may have won a Grammy for this record, but I didn't get a Grammy. I did get a Grammy with the Pat Metheny Group, though.
That's an interesting, different style of music.
I mean, she's just this beautiful musician that just explore and find her own sound and something. It's really hard to categorize what she does, you know, which I think is great. It's music. And that's always how I relate to any sort of music. Okay, is it good music or bad music? Or is it some music that I connect to that I want to play? Or is music that maybe is good, but I don't feel any emotional connection to?
Yeah, and then Pat Metheny, you played with him, and then he did win a Grammy for sure on the Way Up album for Best Contemporary Jazz Album in 2006. And then you went on to tour with Pat Metheny for some time as well. So how was that?
It was great. I mean, same thing. I learned a tremendous amount about music and how to play and what to play and when not to play. And it was amazing. Yeah, we did about a year of touring nonstop. Like, I think we stopped for the entire year of touring. I think we had 3 weeks off.
And so then you did an album, the duo with the Scenarios album, 2007 with Andy Milne, a pianist, which again, I think the chromatic and harmonic and piano, there's a lot of great albums like that. Obviously, Toots did one with Bill Evans. So, you know, that combination with the piano is really special, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I first started playing with Andy Milne, who's part of the M-Bass movement that was started by Steve Coleman. And first I joined Andy Milne's band called Dap Theory. But we toured extensively in the U.S., very little in Europe. When we were playing, Andy always wanted to take a moment in the set to have just this duo setting. And me and him would just play a song. Most of the time we'd play Con Alma of Dizzy Gillespie. We thought, both thought that it was kind of special. Like, it was a really nice moment in the set. We decided eventually that we wanted to record something together. So we came with some material, but not enough to cover an entire album. And we decided that the other half of the album was going to be completely improvised. So half of the record is completely improvised. I'm talking about, we don't even talk about what key we're going to play. We just start. And we wanted to see what would come up. Eventually, you know, we did some stuff that was really interesting, because it just pushes you to listen to an extent that you would not even think of unless you're in a situation where you have no idea what's going to happen.
Obviously, you went on to play with Herbie Hancock, which, you know, is a tremendous gig to get. I mean, you know, probably the pinnacle of a sort of jazz gig in these days. So how did that come about?
I was playing, I think, with Marcus Miller at the time. Herbie had heard of me for a long time, but we never played together, really. But he knew of me. And I was probably his biggest fan, and I still am. And then eventually I was part of Marcus Miller's band, and he was doing a lot of crews at the time, and he invited Herbie to be part of one of the crews that he was the musical director. So they did like a special set where Marcus Miller was playing bass, and Pucci Bell, Marcus's drummer, was playing drums. Herbie was into having me come and sit in, so I came and sat in, and he was like, man, it's been a long time coming, but we're going to do a lot together. So eventually he called me, and so I started playing with him.
And so you toured with him for 2 years?
Yeah, I did. I did a few different tours. The first tour I did, like real tour I did with him, was in Europe. And we toured for about, I think, 4 months straight, just Europe. We left in September and came back for Christmas.
And a song I've got of you playing with him is probably possibly his most famous song, which is Cantaloupe Island. So you get a nice extended solo on that one. I know that's a song that you really love. Yeah. So it must have been special.
But it's extremely challenging to play with Herbie, not in a in the best way possible. I'm just saying you can never just assume things are going to be one way because they're always going to be different. But it's the best thing that I always dreamt of, you know, like that was really just being on the edge, but in the best way possible.
Where do you go from playing with Herbie Hancock? You went on, I think you played also with Elton John and Sting at the concert for the Rainforest.
Yeah.
You recorded with a song with Sting as well, did you?
Yeah, I went in a studio with Sting for a while. It actually was for his album, is it called My Ship? Something like that. But I don't think that whatever I recorded or the songs that I recorded made it to the record. But it was nevertheless a great experience.
Yeah, so some great names, as you say, you play with, and then you decided to try and be the band leader rather than the sideman, and you made your first album, your first as a band leader in 2012, called Grégoire Moret. Tell us about that one. You had quite a lot of guests on there, didn't you? Including Toots Thielemans, of course, and Cassandra Wilson, and so yeah. How about that one of putting your first album together?
I mean, it was a long time coming, you know. I knew I was going to do an album eventually of my music and the sort of vision I had of the sort of music I really wanted to present. I embarked on a long journey of trying to make that happen. It took quite a while. Federico González Peña, who produced and co-wrote some of the songs, really helped me tremendously for that. So we really spent a huge amount of time working on the pre-production on certain songs and the post-production on certain songs, because it's like two suites on a record. So it's a bunch of songs that are just kind of regular tunes, either compositions of mine or standards like The Man I Love and stuff like that. There's also two suites. One is called Children's Suite and the other one is called Crepuscule. That we worked on for weeks, literally, like all day, just getting the right sounds, getting the right everything. So it was a labor of love, I would say. It was a great experience. I had this kind of vision where I wanted to kind of fulfill something quite big, you know, musically, because I had the chance to play with so many people and they were helping me to grow musically. So I wanted to go into something that I felt was bigger than just playing just tunes or playing. So that's why I went into this this format. I was touring on and off with Cassandra Wilson for about, 10 years. So it was very natural for me to call her and be a special guest on this record. Also ask Mark Kibo of Take Six to also sing on it, and Marcus Miller also guest on the record. You know, it was just one of these things where I just felt like it was a way to kind of look back, look forward, and also embracing my past to make something special happen.
Yeah, it's a great album. I've been listening to it a lot over the last couple of days, and it really has that sense of building through the album because of those two suites that you mentioned there, doesn't it? You know, you got the kind of three songs or so on those two suites, which really, you know, it kind of develops through the album, which is really nice.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was, but it was an intentional thing. Like, I really wanted to get those songs. I wanted to give at least for those two songs, like a really long format where I could develop something over an extended amount of time. And I could really express the full range of expression I wanted to get into.
Yeah. And so you composed those songs yourself then?
Yeah. So the middle part is I wrote. And then the intro and the outro, both Federico and I wrote together. And he, for instance, the intro and outro of Crepuscule Suite, he literally played all the parts. Like, you know, we played, there was percussions, there was all kinds of keyboards. And he just kind of did most of it, which was amazing.
And I understand you do a lot of your composing at the piano.
Yeah, I'm kind of old school, you know, with the composing process. So I have a piano at home, and I start writing on piano most of the time. And I'll write down the idea on paper, like music paper. The reason why I do that is I could go into trying to create demos, but I really enjoy the creating process when people don't hear a demo and they just get a lead sheet and they try to create something out of that. Sometimes it goes really in a different direction than anything I would have imagined. And it's a great surprise for me. That's something I really embrace in life and love. Sometimes if I feel it's too different, I'll guide them a bit to be like, okay, let's try again, but let's go in this direction instead, you know. Most of the time it's something is surprising and exciting because it's kind of something different than what I could have imagined. And it's better in a sense, like I can't just go beyond, you know, having just full control of everything all the time because everything has been already demoed and everybody's just trying to imitate the demo, you know.
So are you quite accomplished piano player nowadays? Is that something you've developed?
No, not at all. I can write music on piano, but I'm not at all a pianist, you know.
And then your next solo, your next album as a band leader was the album Wanted, which you released in 2016.
So that was sort of an album where I wanted to play songs that I could. Now, the whole album was actually almost the antithesis to the previous one, which was highly produced, highly pre-written before we went in the studio and recorded parts. You know, it was, this one was like, I wrote everything on lead sheets, gave everything to the musician, never told him anything, and we started recording. And out of that, I worked a lot in post-production, you know, but there was no pre-production at all. And I did that intentionally. I really wanted to see what they were going to create. But the other aim with this record was trying to get some music that would be sort of the music that when I first started to be really passionate about music as a teenager, I would say, and really wanting to become a musician, what kind of music I was listening to, what kind of music I really wanted to listen to and check out and try to play and all stuff. I know that record, if it had been coming from another artist, that record would have been a record that I would have just listened to over and over and over again back then. So it was sort of that, the idea behind this record, you know?
Yeah, and of course you do the very famous standard Blue and Green, which you do this really interesting thing when you're playing in unison. I think, is it Chris Potter on the saxophone with you?
Yeah? It's a bass clarinet, yeah.
A bass clarinet, yeah. It's got this really unusual sound with it playing in unison with a bass clarinet, yeah.
That actually came from Michelle when I played on Anthropology's the record Cookies. She had me double a melody with Marcus Miller on bass clarinet, and I always thought that I was quite unusual and really new and fresh, but really beautiful. Yeah. And I was like, I'm gonna have to do that again one day. And eventually, when I did this this arrangement, I thought it would be the perfect opportunity to have this sound.
And then another album you did was Harp versus Harp in 2019, where you played with a very famous harp player called Edmar Castaneda.
Yeah, Edmar is my amazing harpist. He comes from the Colombian tradition, you know, Colombian Venezuelan traditional harp. They have a whole different way of playing the harp in South America. So it's a complete different approach. It's much more rhythmical, you know. They just take it to a different level. They have all this complex rhythm, both in Colombia and Venezuela. He comes from Bogota, and he's just an amazing harpist. So it was kind of similar to the thing that happened with Andy Milne. Like, he invited me to join his band, which was a nonet at the time, for some gigs and some recordings that we did. He would always take also a moment during the set where him and I would do a duo together, and it sounded beautiful. So he thought that we should try to record something together eventually. So we did, you know. After a few gigs that we did together, we decided to try to record something, and this record came from that. Thank you. been doing quite a few dates together. So it's been really quite exciting. Before, obviously, this pandemic, it's been quite exciting to play live with him as well.
A lot of energy comes from that harp, doesn't it? It sounds great, yeah, and it's a good combination. So, and then you did another album with Pat Metheny in 2020 from this place, so you're still playing with him as well?
Yeah, so he called me to record his latest record. We've always kept in touch, you know, but I didn't get to play with him after The Way Up. But yeah, he thought that sound, his voice, my sound, I guess, was needed on this record. So I recorded this thing. It was great, great experience, always. I mean, I love Pat's music. It's always so incredible.
And then another album you as band leader called Americana, which is obviously Americana music. So what made you want to release an album of Americana music?
That's an album that we conceptualized with Roman Cullen, the pianist on the record, something that we created together. We wanted to do and create music together, but we were not sure what we were going to do. We knew that it was going to be something melodic. I love melodies, okay? This is my thing. I love to play out. I love to play modern. I love all that stuff. But down deep, when it comes back to the essential things, it's all about melodies, you know.
Yeah, I think that's what the Chromatic Harmonica is very strong at as well, isn't it, that melodic playing?
Absolutely, but also I feel that nowadays, not necessarily talking about harmonica, but nowadays there's just not that many people who really can play melodies. I mean, there are some, but not that many. A lot of people can play great, but they just don't really play melodies. So for me, it is down deep just all about melody. So we started voicing this wish of being able to kind of really get into melodies, you know, pretty songs. We looked at different songs that we could play, whether it was going to be pop or it was what kind of, we were not exactly sure. And then eventually we decided that this kind of style of music, Americana, was going to be kind of the perfect vehicle for that. Now, I relate to that because I've played with Cassandra Wilson for 10 years, and inside of her world, that style is present. You know, it's not, she doesn't just do Americana, it's not that. She's a jazz singer, but she sings folk songs, she sings songs that kind of in the whole Americana style, she sings sometimes pop songs. And I felt really, really connected to that, you know. I knew that I always felt connected to that playing with her, and that, so it was very natural for me to do it again, to do my take on it, you know.
Yeah, and the song on their Brothers in Arms, which is a song I really love, it sounds great on the harmonica. And also Wichita Lineman as well, which you wouldn't expect.
Well, Wichita is the song that I used to play with Cassandra Wilson for 10 years, and I mean, she was obviously singing it, and then there was always a moment where she would kind of like look at me, and I took a chorus, and for about 10 years we was literally performing the song every night, and I always thought, okay, this song is a treasure. Whenever I'll do something with that kind of music, I'll have to record this song.
Yeah, and I think, again, that really shows that melodic strength that, you know, and particularly with the Chromatic Harmonica is so good at. You know, it's great at playing melodies like that, and it sounds so beautiful.
And it's a song, if you look, you know, it was, created back in early 60s or something like that. I'm not sure exactly the year it was created. But it's quite modern, you know, the way it's composed. Like, it's a song that keeps on going back between two keys, if you really look. It's between B flat major and D major, which is like, wow. It's basically giant steps, but in the most melodic way. So it's kind of really, really exciting and fresh. That song's a big deal for me because I've learned a lot from playing this song, from the way it's voiced, because Cassandra always played with guitar player, no, very few pianists. So the way they were voicing those chords was another sound that became a big part of my musical world.
So, yeah, you played some brilliant people and a great long listener. You know, you're playing as a sideman. So what about, you know, that difference between playing a sideman and the band leader? Which do you prefer?
I love both, you know, and I wanted to keep on doing both. not necessarily like just going 100 days out of the year on tour as a sideman, but I still enjoy being a sideman. You know, it's a totally different philosophy and way of looking at music. It's first of all, it's the thing that's identical is that you're here for the music and making sure the music sounds as good as possible. And that has to be beyond any musician on stage, whether it's me or it's we trying to be bigger than just ourselves, like trying to create something much bigger. So that's the aim, and we all have this aim. That's the first thing. But then when you're a leader, you're the one responsible for literally everything, from bringing the tunes, making sure the arrangements are kind of really the best for that kind of group, whatever group you present, making sure you kind of create the material that's going to be the best for the group that you have, or to put together the best group for the kind of material that you write. You know, that's the big thing. So that's a different kind of mentality. When you're sideman, you don't think about that. You just show up at the gig or at the recording session and just make sure that whatever they have in mind with you is even better than whatever they imagine. You know.
So talking about sideman, you had a documentary made about you by Frédéric Baliff.
Yeah, that was like the early days, actually. It was during the time I was playing with Andy Milne and Charlie Hunter. He's a high school friend of mine. We went to high school together, and he saw how passionate I was with music before I left for the U.S. And then eventually we reconnected when I was in the U.S. in the early stage. So it's right around 9/11. That he recorded this whole documentary. So he saw a lot. You know, he saw me struggle. He saw me go through great moments, beautiful moments of music. But he also saw me go through the whole period of 9/11 where there was no work. You know, it was just an intense moment in my life.
But I tell you, it's a French language film, isn't it?
Well, actually, there's two versions. There's one in English, with subtitles, and then another one in French, yeah.
So yeah, moving on a little bit then, you know, we talked through your career there. You played lots of different styles of music, as you said there, isn't it? It's, you know, you probably get categorized as a jazz musician, but I know, you know, you like to play pop. You played funk as well, didn't you? You played a little bit of classical as well. So
yeah, I had an opportunity once to play contemporary, I guess, classical music or whatever you want to call it. It was an opera composed with a chromatic part in it. It was the story of Alice in Wonderland, composed by the composer Wu Songqing, Chinese composer. So they called me in Geneva to do this, and I did. That was a great experience, you know, because it was so different from anything I've ever done before and after. Playing like really completely written music and having to perform exactly the same every night for a couple months. But it was great, you know. But it was one of those things where the way she wrote the music was not quite correct for the harmonica. I guess she didn't really know the instrument well. So I had to put together like a bunch of harmonicas like stacked up to be able to play whatever she wrote, because she wanted me to play intervals, but it was okay, like certain intervals would be, for instance, in the key of E major and then the other one with C, or you know what I mean? So I couldn't just use one chromatic harmonica for it. I had like five or six harmonicas stacked up in different keys, chromatic. And I would play the thing, jumping from one to the next. And that was the only way I could do it. It was great. I had the pleasure to play with like a children's choir during that time. Every night, it was quite special.
So we touched on Toots Thielemans. You had some contact with him when you were younger. Yeah? He gave you some tips and such, did he?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started playing the chromatic harmonica, one of the musicians that was sort of my mentor back then, named Antoine Auguet, was playing in a big band in it's the next city next to Geneva. And they had this perfect concert or series of concerts that they were going to do with Toots Thielemans. And he was like, man, I'm about to go play with Toots. I need to introduce you to him because that's the guy. And I was like, man, that's incredible. I went to the concert, and after the concert, he did introduce me to Toots. And Toots put me on the spot, old school. It was like, play. I got my harmonica, tried to play a blues, but I got completely lost. I was 17 at the time. I just couldn't play in front of him. I was just too starstruck, you know. It was just too much. But somehow he saw and heard something, you know. So he was like, you know what? Come with me. Let's take a walk. So we left the place where he performed, and we walked in the city. And he was like, listen, I heard you. Now, if you like what I play, what I do, you should take it as an example, and eventually you should detach yourself and find your own path musically. And that's really what you should do. You shouldn't just try to copy me. You should take it and grow out of it, you know. And that's basically what I've been trying to do my entire life since that day. It was like being obviously really influenced by him and Stevie Wonder, of course. Out of that, try to kind of find my own path musically. I think I was really fortunate because I got to meet people who forced me also sort of like to do that. Like they give me no choice. Like Steve Coleman, for instance, when I got to play with him, there was no way I could really just play whatever Toots or Stevie were playing on the harmonica. I had to come up with something different that would work with his music, that was much more angular, you know.
Did you spend a lot of time, you know, working out Toots solos and things like that?
No, I did a few of them, of his, but not a whole lot of time, because early on, I got to meet him during this time when I was quite, 17, quite young, and I knew already that I had to try to find something else. I mean, I was definitely very influenced by him and loved all his stuff, but I wasn't somebody who was just learning every single solo of his and trying to play all his solos and everything. I've learned probably two or three. And after that, I just forced myself to learn other things. So I would try to check out Freddie Hubbard, for instance. I learned Ready for Freddie, Bird-like, you know, the blues on Ready for Freddie, exactly the way Freddie played it. So it sounded like an effect on the trumpet. I played also Herbie's solos. It was the same thing. It felt like it was either an effect on the piano or like a keyboard. So I just did a lot of that, where I was just really trying to really understand other musicians and other instrumentalists, you know, rather than just copy Toots.
And particularly in jazz, I think it's very important to do that, isn't it? There's not that many jazz harmonica players, so it's really important, particularly you go and learn from other instruments as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so a question I ask each time, if you had 10 minutes to practice in the day, what would you spend those 10 minutes doing?
I would come back to playing scales and arpeggios and the sound. So I would do long tones, like something like that, like... And really have the sound really steady, like not just going through... First, without vibrato, you know, just really straight, just to have a real control of the sound. And then eventually you can venture into playing vibrato and all that stuff. The other thing that I would do is playing really soft. But with a lot of projection. So you hear, you heard me, and it's very soft. At the same time, it's very clean, precise. You have control of the note from the very beginning until the very end. It's not something that just kind of going all over the place. It doesn't have to be a long tone that stays like I'm playing that long or forever. It just can be relatively short. As long as it's really controlled, it has to be controlled. That's what you're practicing. That's the first thing I would do. The other thing that I would do is like literally arpeggios, like... That kind of stuff, you know, which is really, really actually important for just articulation. And then I would just play like even just major scales. In all 12 keys. Or you can do it over two octaves. And then eventually you can kind of do it fast. That already with these exercises, you have a lot. Now, if you have all that stuff together and you can sort of practice it over 10 minutes, that's great. So it's already a lot. And then if you had another 10 minutes, I would kind of, whatever, choose a song. That, it doesn't have to be complex, whatever song you want to play, and try to really play the melody sounding really good. Each note sounds great. And the last thing that I would say is it's really beneficial to practice with a metronome. So whether it's a tune or even those exercises that I just showed, just try to practice with a metronome, because this time in jazz is essential. Got to be able to have good time.
It's interesting. So you're still working on those more basic things now, are you?
I always go back to that. The very complex stuff, I'll work on it for a while and then I'll go into something else and I'll just explore different things, different types of scales, different types of everything. The thing that I never change are those basic exercises. First, start slow. Don't start playing fast. Fast comes later. you know, fast is not as important as sounding great. That what you want is to sound great. Each note sounds great. Like each note is a pure treasure. It sounds so good. I mean, when you listen to other instrumentalists, when they play the instruments, it's like that. And every time they play something, it's like, wow. Listen to Keith Jarrett, you know. Like every time he plays a note, it's ridiculously beautiful. Listen to Herbie. Listen to Pat Metheny. Every freaking note he's playing on the guitar is perfect. Always like that sense of perfection. Already first with the sound, the tone, and then eventually you get to, if you want to play faster, you know, whatever, more complex, you can. But there's nothing wrong with playing very, very simple as long as it's beautiful. That's going to be much more effective and emotionally interesting and powerful than playing fast.
Talking on to the last section now, which is talking more about gear and the gear that you use. So we'll talk about your signature harmonica, which is the Suzuki G48, one of which I own, by the way, and it's a very fine harmonica. So this came about in 2005. I think you were over in Japan. So tell us the story about how you came to help create the G48.
I met the people at Suzuki in Japan when I was on tour with Pat Metheny. So they would basically give me some instrument to try. Honestly, at the time, though, his instruments were not good, but they were leaking all over the place. As soon as I had to play something a little bit more challenging, a bit faster, or just tricky or technically, it was just not happening. So I was telling them, listen, I like parts of the instrument, but there's other parts that really need a lot of work. And if you're willing to work together with me, I'll be happy to get this thing improved with you. They were really excited about the idea. They had a really young team in the factory at the time. We were all about the same age. So we became really good friends. They were all really, really all about trying to create great instruments. They just needed some input. I started giving them the input I could give them. And they were really aggressive in trying to make it a much better instrument. So, for instance, the entire time I was on tour with Pat Metheny in Japan, which was about 3 weeks, I don't know, maybe a month, it was literally like they would give me a harmonica, I would try it, and I'd be telling them via email, like, listen, okay, this and this is not quite right. You know, you could maybe improve it like this, like that. Maybe the next day or the following day, I had a different harmonica. So I would try again, and I'd be like, well, this is much better, or this is, you know, whatever, and this could change and get improved better as well. And again, I would get another instrument the next day. I don't know how many harmonica I tried. And eventually what we did is that I would try them for longer, not just a day, but this time maybe a couple of weeks, and then give them some feedback, and they would send me another instrument, and we would do that. We did that for a long time. And eventually they came with the wish of making my signature model, because I helped them with their basic instrument to make them much better. And they were like, maybe we can make an upgraded version, like something that is really you. And I was like, I would love that. That would be great. So we worked actually about 4 years to make that harmonica together. Same thing. They would send me prototypes and I would just play and try it again and tell them, no, this is not quite good, and until it was perfect. And I remember very, very vividly when perfect instrument arrived. It was when I started that tour with Herbie in Europe during the rehearsal. I received two harmonicas. And I was just like, this is perfect. And I tried them for 3 months, 4 months, whatever, and I was like, they still are in tune. They are beautiful, man. That's it. That's what I want to play.
Very fine chromatics. Yeah, people can definitely check them out. And there's the wooden bodies one as well, isn't it? Which you prefer, the wooden body or the metal?
I love both. It's an interesting thing because I have a different relationship with both of them. Now I play the wooden one more, but I love the metal one. When I first started playing my signature, I was playing a lot more the metal one for whatever reason. I had much more of a connection, I guess, to it at the time. Now I'm more with the wooden one, and I'm sure I'll go back and forth, like, and I still use the metal one for sure, but I use the wooden one a bit more.
So I assume the G48 Gwegwo Amore chromatic is the only chromatic you play.
Yeah, that's the only thing. I mean, sometimes when I need like a longer range or whatever, I'll play the 4-octave series. It could be for a recording. For instance, when I recorded Brothers in Arms, it's a key that it goes too low. So I had to record that on the Sirius harmonica, 4-octave.
And so you mainly play a 12-hole chromatic?
Yeah. Absolutely. Especially live.
And do you want to use standard tuned chromatic?
Yeah, I mean, Brandon Power was always trying to get me to try to use his different tuning. I tried a few. He gave me a diminished Suzuki harmonic. I like the regular tuner.
Do you play any diatonic at all nowadays?
Not really anymore. I still own quite a few, and I'll jam on it once in a while.
And what embouchure do you use?
A tongue block all the time, which I believe really helps me to get the sort of definition I have when I play a bit faster. I think the tongue blocking is helpful.
And talking about equipment, but do you play for any amplifiers or do you use the PA, you know, going mainly for a clean sound with a chromatic?
I do have an amplifier, but it's just when I rehearse or maybe at home for certain things.
But is it a clean sort of acoustic?
Yeah, it's completely clean. But other than that, when I perform concerts, I do concerts, it's always just the PA.
And what microphone do you like to use?
It can vary, but so it's not the same at all, not the same setup when I record and when I play live. So live, I can play like a Shure 58. I like when it's wireless because it gives me the freedom to move around a little bit. There's also this company, Earthworks Mics. They're incredible. And then for the amp, Schertler amplification. They are beautiful. They have the bass, they have everything, and they're small.
And so you mentioned using different mics for recording then. So what sort of mics do you like to record with?
To record, I use two mics. So I'll use a variety of different types of mic, but it's always I'll have a Royer, which is known actually for great sound for acoustic guitar, for instance. And then a brighter mic that has just a great definition and sounds good, but maybe a little bit too bright. So the Royer will always give it a little bit more body and a little bit more warmth.
And is the Royer, is that a ribbon mic, the Royer?
Exactly.
So some of those Royer ribbon mics, they're the most famous ribbon mics, and some of them are very expensive. It's not a 1-2-1, is it?
Yeah, it is the Royer. Exactly, that's the one. The Royer 1-2-1. Yes, I just put it.
So the ribbon mics are really expensive, but I think the ribbon mics work really well with the chromatic because it really softens that high end on the chromatic.
Yeah, exactly. But I need a second mic to make it really sound perfect.
And what about using any effects?
Yes, I started. I'm also endorsing Zoom, you know, Zoom, but not the company that makes teleconference, but Zoom, the pedal effects or the recorder. So they make all kinds of pedals effects. So I've been working with one of their newest effects, which is a multi-effect pedal that is designed for the voice or the harmonica or, I guess, different like acoustic instruments. Yeah, it's the Zoom A1X. For acoustic instruments, multi-effect processor. So I've been kind of playing with that, and I also own a bunch of Boss pedals. So I do work with effects, yes. But I'm very prudent to try to use it really when it needs it, not just to use it. I just really try to make sure that it's the right time. That's the same thing. It's all about music, and the music should tell you when that should be used, not the other way around.
Last sort of question then. Obviously, we're still in pandemic time at the moment. So how are things looking for you now? What's your future plans?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, I'm still recording some, but in terms of live, I may have some shows in the fall, but I'm not sure what's going to happen. I'm invited with Edmar to come at the London Jazz Festival, but I don't know if we're going to be able to come. But then after that would be, I've got a couple possible shows in the fall, but then after that, it would be next year. So I'm basically really planning on trying to start again next year.
Finishing off, you're taking part in the Harmonica UK Chromatic Weekend this Friday evening at 8 p.m. UK time. So people who hear before then, which is on the 24th of July 2020. So yeah, if people catch that before then, obviously they can check you out on that doing a workshop, which we're looking forward to as well. So thanks very much, Gregoire, for the time.
Thank you.
That's it for today, folks. Final word from my sponsor, the Lone Wolf Blues Company, providing some great effects pedals and microphones, all purpose-built for the harmonica. Be sure to check out their website. Gregoire, play some Crepuscule Suite.